Today's podcast of The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
For those of us old enough to remember 1979, the sounds from Iran sound a little familiar. 30 years ago, the people of Iran rose up to oust the Shah, and Iran became an Islamic republic. Today, protesters in Tehran shout, "We will fight, we will die, we will get our country back." And it has us wondering, is this the beginning of the second Iranian revolution? On The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from Public Radio International and WNYC.
Good morning. It's Tuesday, December 29th. Luke Burbank is with me this morning. He's filling in for John Hockenberry. Good morning, Luke, and welcome.
Celeste, fancy meeting you here. Let's get right to the top stories we're following this morning. Reassuring words from President Obama.
The American people should be assured that we are doing everything in our power to keep you and your family safe and secure.
At the airports, passengers are increasingly being patted down and carry-ons double-checked. Canine teams are out in force, and international flights now have more air marshals mixed in. But a report this morning from our partner, the New York Times, says there are gaps in that security. It says the government has yet to find a way to efficiently match passenger names with terror watch lists. The Times also reports millions of dollars were squandered on faulty technology, like those high-tech puffer machines that repeatedly broke down and failed to detect explosives.
Privacy concerns are keeping other high-tech machines from being put into use. Full-body scanners show the body's contours in great detail, which critics says amounts to a virtual strip search. But former Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff says that shouldn't trump safety.
There's a cost to elevating privacy above everything else, which is the cost to the rights of everybody else on the airplane to get to their destination in one piece.
The original plan was to have these body scanners at every checkpoint. So far, only 40 machines are in place nationwide. In Iran, authorities say they're holding the bodies of five protesters killed during anti-government protests on Sunday. It's an attempt to keep the opposition from using the funerals for more protests. Yesterday, President Obama condemned Iran's tactics.
The decision of Iran's leaders to govern through fear and tyranny will not succeed in making those aspirations go away.
For more, we're joined now by Hamid Dabashi, professor of Iranian studies at Columbia University. Hamid, you were actually part of the protests in Iran in 1979. So when you watch these protests on TV today, do they look familiar to you?
Good morning, Celeste. Well, there are many similarities, but it's a whole different ballgame. When you see Mr. Mousavi, aging, seasoned revolutionary, and a young protester in the streets of Tehran, think of an aging football player coaching his son or daughter who is a soccer player. There are many gestures in the field, but it's a whole different ballgame.
Well, do you see a strong opposition leader emerging, Mousavi or perhaps someone else?
Perhaps yes, perhaps no. But the fact remains that the movement is a civil rights movement. It will need a leader, but multiple leaders will do.
Okay, Hamid Dabashi, stay with us. We're going to talk with you more in just a moment.
And moving over to Afghanistan, a provincial governor says a U.S. airstrike killed 10 civilians. However, NATO is denying that charge. In Pakistan, the authorities in Karachi are appealing for calm after a bombing against a religious procession in Karachi left 40 dead and sparked riots throughout the city. And checking on the markets this morning, Asian markets ended up with European indices up as well. Wall Street futures are up. The Dow gets underway at 10,547. The S&P opens at 1,127. And the NASDAQ opens at 2,291.
We're going to talk about work today, as we do every Tuesday. Coming up, if you're out of work, we'll tell you how to think of it as possibly an opportunity to get a fresh start on in a different career path. That's later on this hour. And we're also talking to you today about New Year's resolutions. Not for you, for America. What should be the country's 2010 resolution? Maybe better screening from TSA. I don't think that'll be high on people's priority list. Then it'll get Congress to pass health care, maybe? Climate change? Let us know at 8778-MYTAKE or send us an email to mytake@thetakeaway.org. We're going to talk more about the protests in Iran and how they compare to the 1979 revolution in just a minute.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning. I'm Celeste Headlee, and I'm here with Luke Burbank. Good morning, Luke.
Good morning, Celeste.
I don't know if you remember, Luke, the Iranian Revolution of 1979. I was 9 years old at the time. But over the weekend, we got news out of Tehran of Iranian authorities arresting a number of prominent opposition figures. At least 8 people are dead in the past few days. That's the latest in a series of recent protests since the disputed elections that happened over the summer. And if you remember the news coverage of the revolution in 1979, it may seem reminiscent of what was happening then. That was a string of protests that ousted the Shah and ended up putting the Ayatollah into power.
And for the first time since violent anti-Shah protests began in Iran more than a year ago, there were celebrations in the streets of Tehran.
The Shah's departure made Ayatollah Khomeini, in effect, the new ruler of Iran.
That Iranian revolution took a year to culminate, and the people are wondering now, are we seeing the seeds of a new revolution? So to answer that question for us, we have the former head of the BBC's Persian service, Bakr Moyn. He wrote a book on the 1979 revolution called Khomeini, Life of the Ayatollah. And joining us again, Hamid Dabashi, professor of Iranian studies at Columbia University. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning to you,
Celeste.
Hamid, let me ask you, you know, the original revolution that you were a part of did take more than a year. Are we seeing the seeds of that going on in Iran now?
Not really. You were 9, I was 25, and the things were slightly similar but entirely different, because the objective of the movement at the time was simply the fall of the Shah and return of Ayatollah Khomeini. That is, you had a charismatic leader leading the revolution, and you had a despised dictator that people wanted to get rid of. This is not a scenario anymore. This is a far maturer society after its civil liberties. For the first time in the history of modern Iran, people are out in the streets asking, where is my vote? This is how this movement started. Against a political culture that historically asked the question, where is my gun? And that is a seismic change that has happened in Iranian political culture, not only over the past 30 years, but over the last 200 years. So there are fundamental differences.
Bakr Moyn, would you agree with that? You covered the 1979 revolution.
Absolutely. I think Professor Dabashi is right. It's about citizenship. It's not about charisma. The population of Iran is twice as much. The people are better educated and better informed. I think they want their rights. They want democracy. They want a movement towards a much liberated society from religious dogma, as well as the conservative tyranny that has been brought about by Ayatollah Khamenei as some of his aides in undermining all institutional democratic institutions in Iran. For that reason, we don't have a charismatic leader like Ayatollah Khomeini, nor the wide variety of mosques that they were at disposal. Nevertheless, is a social movement that is going ahead slowly but surely and deeply.
Well, the question then is, can this social movement succeed without some form of overthrow of the government? And certainly, Hamid Dabashi, there's no template for a revolution. Every revolution is its own individual and unique animal, right?
I agree, Celeste, but also keep in mind that success can be defined differently. As Mr. Moyn just told you, right now this struggle is for civil liberties, and already the public space, whether we are talking about internet or the streets of Tehran and Shiraz and Isfahan and so forth, have been appropriated by the demonstrators. And they are the initiators. They initiate change, and the government has to respond. And they have pushed the government of Ahmadinejad, and even beyond that, the entirety of the regime, to a position that if they yield, they lose. If they attack, they lose. What the end result of this might be is an open question. It might be eliminating the figure of Vali-e-Faqih from the Constitution. It could be reconvening of the Constitutional Assembly. It could be putting the entire notion of an Islamic Republic as a referendum, as a plebiscite. This is all open and remains to be seen. But the fact that a population has matured, 80% of the Iranian population is under the age of 40, 50% is under the age of 25. They neither have a memory of the revolution of 30 years ago, nor could they care less about those who do. It's a whole different ballgame.
Well, Bakker-Moyne, the government has been cracking down. You heard Hamid Debashi talking about how the government loses no matter what it does. And, you know, obviously they've been ramping up the government response to these protests. We heard that the nephew of Mir Hossein Mousavi was killed. His body was confiscated. Five bodies of protesters were confiscated. And they're ramping up their response. Is Ahmadinejad eventually perhaps going to have to step down?
Well, that would be one option, but I think before that, really, we have to have more democracy within the current constitution. I think what would happen is that there are extremists within both camps, but the main body of the reformist camp and the Green Movement, really, they want more democracy within the current setup and push it forward in order to reach full democracy. I don't think it's a political movement to change the regime and suddenly we have democracy. No, it's about democracy and may take longer. And the longer it takes, the more mature the whole situation would become. Naturally, there are hardliners within the government who want to radicalize the other side in order to clamp down and justify it. And I think Ayatollah Khamenei's position is really depends how he manages to survive within the whole thing. But nevertheless, as a whole, the opposition is now gradually finding its voice and positioning itself for a longer period rather than a quick success.
Well, let's talk about that success. Hamid Debashi, what are the chances for success in this fight for civil rights in Iran?
I think the chances are absolutely excellent. And already, 6 months into the operation, I recall it was almost 4 or 5 months ago I was in your show. The momentum has sustained itself. The people are using any occasion to pour into the streets and redefine the political scene. The reason that the government now is into the business of snatching bodies, because it is afraid that the funeral processions will be used for further demonstrations. But it's a useless attempt, because it doesn't matter what occasion the demonstrators they use, they will use it. Right now we are in the month of Muharram, which is a religiously charged month. But it doesn't matter. A few years, months from now, we will have Iranian New Year on the solar calendar, and it would be the same thing. The point and purpose of the demonstration for the last 6 months has been to come to the streets, demand and exact civil liberties. Article 27 of the Constitution of the Islamic Republic grants its citizens permission for peaceful assembly. It is the government of the Islamic Republic that is in the violation of its own constitution, rather than people who have been systematically and consistently asking for permission and not been given those permissions. So they're coming into the streets is simply exercising their constitutional rights, which they have not been able to do over the last 30 years.
Okay, Hamid Debashi, professor of Iranian studies at Columbia University. He was part of the protests that led up to the 1979 Iranian Revolution. And Bakker-Moyne joined us, former head of the BBC Persian service and author of the book Khomeini, Life of the Ayatollah. It's 15 minutes past the hour. Let's check in now on the headlines.
Thanks, Celeste. President Obama is ordering his national security team to make the skies safer.
Those who would slaughter innocent men, women, and children must know that the United States will do more than simply strengthen our defenses. We will continue to use every element of our national power to disrupt, to dismantle, and defeat the violent extremists who threaten us.
The president is ordering a probe into how terror watch lists are managed. The move comes after the failed attempt to blow up a U.S. airliner on Christmas Day. A separate review of security procedures at the nation's airports is also underway.
Latin America has its first gay marriage. An official in Argentina says two men were married there yesterday. Gay marriage remains illegal in the country, but this was a special concession from the provincial government. And in China, a British man convicted of drug smuggling has been executed. That's despite several last-minute pleas for clemency from the British government. That's a look at some of the stories that we're following this morning. Coming up, recent flight worries aren't just bad news for travelers, but airlines also. We're going to look at the business of air travel and how it will be impacted.
Thanks for listening to the Takeaway Podcast. If there's a story you think we should look at or a conversation you'd like us to start, drop us a line at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.